Thank you, Jeremy. Good morning, fellow students in the hall here and fellow students out on our teleconference. Welcome to April the 20th, Philosophy School, Vancouver. It is customary for us to start our presentations with a unifying thought for the breathing. And 2 days ago in Vancouver, we had a very interesting event. We had 2 inches of snow in the middle of the night, in the middle of April, which is, happens a lot in the rest of Canada, but we don't expect it out here in Lotus Land. Pardon me. And, it makes you wonder what the weather is coming to. It seems to be getting more and more chaotic. And, of course, in the Kabbalah philosophy, we believe that every aspect of the universe has a purpose to it. And mankind's purpose is to be the eyes, ears, and mouthpiece of God, the principal on earth, the steward of the earth. So why not the weather? Brings me back to a couple of months ago, I saw a short documentary on Qigong. And there was a 90-year-old Qigong master. And he was crossing a street in a very busy city in China. And he came to the curb and he just hesitated for a moment and then proceeded to cross. And as he was crossing, traffic was coming in front of him and behind him, and he just went straight across the street and continued. And I wouldn't recommend anybody else emulate that. But to me, the lesson with his environment. He wasn't aggressive. He didn't fight the driver. He didn't push his way out there. He wasn't afraid either. He just was in harmony with his environment. And what would the world be like if we had 6 billion people who were in harmony with their environment? We don't know yet. So this morning, I thought it'd be nice to start our week by visualizing being in harmony throughout the day. As we go through our day, as we get up, our body in harmony, our relationships and our family in harmony at breakfast, our commute in the morning in harmony. And as we go through the day, all the people we meet, we would only attract harmony and we would only give harmony. So it's turn the seats if you would join me in taking 3 deep breaths and visualizing being in harmony with our environment. Thank you. So for your presentation this morning, we have 2 speakers. And the first speaker will be speaking on thoughts to live by. She has been up here many times to give us excellent presentations. Monica Daniel is one of the instructors in some of our courses. And she always has a big smile and a warm heart. So please welcome Monica Daniel, Thoughts to Live By.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thoughts to Live By. I've had this sheet pinned to my fridge for many years, and it's taken from an excerpt of Mr. Parker, the founder of the philosophy, and it's called Wisdom is Power. But these were thoughts that were taken from the article that, or the public presentation that Mr. Parker gave at that time, and I haven't been able to track down the actual presentation, but these were notes that a student took from this presentation. So the thoughts on this article were the suggested requirements of things one must do to penetrate the higher world of spiritual thinking. Well, the first couple of questions that we can ask ourselves is, first of all, what is spiritual thinking? And the second question right off the bat is, why would one want to penetrate the higher world of spiritual thinking? Spiritual thinking, I've always appreciated the description of spiritual thinking in a very practical and down-to-earth way, and I don't have it exactly right, but it goes something like this: the careful handling of every experience we encounter on a daily basis to get the best possible outcome. In the article that Mr. Parker wrote many years ago, that's called What Constitutes Spiritual Development, Mr. Parker states, the lesson of spiritual development is the lesson of mental development, because spirituality is only a state of mind. So when we think of somebody who is a spiritual person or who exemplifies spiritual thinking, what do we think of? Well, sometimes we can think maybe a person should be extremely gregarious and overly expressive and who smiles all the time and loves everybody and everything. Or else it's a person that we think in terms of not being as expressive, turning their back on the physical and the material aspects of life, and want to live away from civilization and think about life and meditate and chant and so forth. But spirituality is really neither of these things. It doesn't represent mysterious powers. It is no more mysterious than when we put a bulb, a daffodil or tulip bulb in the fall, and we see a beautiful daffodil or tulip in the spring. It can't be mysterious. That's not mysterious to us, because we recognize that there is a law applicable to the plant kingdom, and we know that the law of growth will, with the proper nourishment, that bulb will grow to its full potential, and we'll have a number of daffodils, and we can see them in between the snow. We can see the daffodils and the tulips here in Vancouver. So when we think of someone who exemplifies spiritual thinking, what do you think of? Think of someone who is kind and treats people objectively, who has a broad perspective in life, and when talks about life and looks at life, does not use opinion, but draws from a broader perspective away from self. So it's all of these qualities and more, and someone who takes the time to listen. Someone who takes the time to be kind. Sometimes spirituality can be what is required for that other person's needs at the time. That's what spirituality should be. We all have expressions of spirituality in our lives at different times. We know that if our mind is lifted, and our mind is you could say lifted and allowed a natural expression, and we're wanting to reach other people, that we can express thoughts, and afterwards we say to ourselves, gosh, where did those come from? You know, I knew that person was in need, and they're so appreciative afterwards, and you think, oh, my goodness, I had no idea. And especially when someone is in need, we can express our thoughts clearly, and being giving to that individual. Also, sometimes when we have a bit of time to relax and be out in nature, we can feel, you could say, in a way, spiritual. Our mind is lifted and we're able to think about life and draw from our thoughts later on, trying to solve problems, dealing with people, things of that nature. Then also one of the other thoughts relative to being spiritual or thinking spiritual thoughts is being able to express the strength of all the qualities. When we talk about all the qualities, we were talking about the qualities from 1 to 9, which is a basic principle that we teach in the Kabbalah and philosophy. We think in terms of someone who is able to be individual at a time when it's needed, being tactful when it's needed, being happy and expressive when it's needed, being practical and down to earth, and being able to be detailed and express our thoughts in a detailed manner and give the reason behind things. We're able to look forward and say, well, let's go out and do different things. Let's analyze this, analyze things, and think more broad about things. A person that's more responsible and reliable, and a person that is more thoughtful and can draw from the deeper aspects of life and express them very clearly. Someone who is organized and material and appreciate material value. And as someone who has a universal perspective, all of these are qualities that I just expressed, or just all the strengths of the qualities from 1 to 9. And we can draw from these. We can be like a computer. And we have this disk in our computer, and we have all of these positive qualities, and we can press the button when at will, and we can draw from any one of these qualities or a combination of them for whatever is needed for the experience that we're in. And that's really, in a way, a form of being spiritual or developing mentally. So a person who exemplifies spiritual thinking may still have very serious challenges in their life, but it's all in the way that they handle it. So now, why would one want to penetrate the higher world of spiritual thinking? Because it is our purpose in life to be the channel for that higher power in life that we call universal consciousness. You know, we know that there is a purpose in all of life. There has to be. There's so much intelligence in life. And just as all other species have their purpose in life, so does humankind. And our purpose, in a nutshell, is to be the eyes, ears, and mouthpiece of this God principle that expresses in all of life. So we recognize that there is a purpose in all of life, and even from the small amoeba right to the plant kingdom and through the animal kingdom, because we see it expressing. We see the intelligence in life. We see the intelligence in the different planets revolving around the sun. Why don't they bump into one another? Why is there a spring, a summer, an autumn, and a fall? Why is there? We see this intelligence in all of life. So there is an intelligence in humankind too, and there's laws. Just as there's laws in the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom, there's laws that humankind has to draw from too and has to live by. So the difference that we have with regards to the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom is that we have mind. We have the ability to make choices. We have the ability to think and to decide, I choose not to do this or I choose to do this. And there is no other, species on the face of the earth that has that ability. So as a result, being the highest, expression of life, we are also the stewards of life and have to take responsibility for the success and failure of the life that we see around us. To fulfill our potential as an individual expression of this God power, we must learn what our individual potential is and express it naturally and freely. And that's part of the course that we teach in the Kabbalarian philosophy called Life Analysis Training. That's very easy to say, but how does one start? One starts with searching for the principles of life relative to humankind and living them, finding out what those laws are, applying them in our lives, and seeing the results. So we are very fortunate in the Kabbalarian philosophy because we do have the laws. Mr. Parker did all the searching and testing and confirming, and we are the beneficiaries of his work. So we still have to find our own path to penetrate those higher levels of spiritual thinking. And it's not just instinctive. It doesn't just happen. We have to work for it. It's an attainment to us. So now I'm going to start with these 13 different points. And the first one is, one's thoughts must be of a higher vibration in all things. Our thoughts represent the sum total of our lives. We are what we think. And our thinking has to be based on logic and reason. We live in the world of thought, and it all depends on our plane of thinking, where we draw our thoughts from. Mr. Parker wrote a wonderful book, Thoughts Are Things, and there's a quote in that book, and I couldn't find it, but it goes something like this. If we were but to realize the importance of all our thoughts in our life, we would try to be aware of every thought that we were aware of and what we would actually express. We also recognize the second half of this thought is our thoughts must be of a higher vibration. We also recognize that there is a speed of vibration in life as well. We can see that from even in our own lives. You know for yourself when your home is cluttered and not so clean and there's lots of things all around it, we can feel it. Some people can live in that. I can understand that, but some people can live in that. But most people find that very disturbing to be around that because it's a lowering of the vibration of the environment in one's home. And you know how you feel if you decide to do your spring cleaning and you clean out all the clutter and you clean your house, wash the walls, clean the cupboards, everything. You feel so much happier afterwards because the vibration has been lifted. So when we think about our own thoughts, that's fine for the environment, but what about ourselves? Well, when we are happy, we are drawing from a higher vibration. And what are the tools that we can use? What are the laws pertaining to happiness? Well, we do teach in the Kabbalarian philosophy the principle of right diet, right breathing, right exercise, and right mental stimulation. And as we use those laws, we use those, you could say, tools, we too can lift our vibration. So we do have a choice in the thoughts that we think, and we want those thoughts to be of a higher level. The second point is, let your actions and thoughts be guided by a universal concept. What is a universal concept? Well, really when you think about it, a universal concept is based on the fact that what is good for one is good for all. When we think universally, we have to recognize that there are laws applicable to the universe. We have to learn those laws, and we also have to recognize that it is applicable to all. The focus has to be relative to a broader perspective, because when we base our decisions and our life on self, self is like a moving target because it changes by the way that we feel. And if we base our life on a universal perspective or universal laws, those universal laws are as constant as those planets going around the sun. We can count on them. So our lives can be more orderly. Our lives can be more, there can be more systems in our lives, and our lives can be, you could say, less like a moving target and more happiness and constant. And I think that's what we're all reaching for. We also have to recognize that when we make decisions, there has to be a greater reason for those decisions. And again, the laws of life pertaining to right living are the universal laws, and again, taught in the Kabbalarian philosophy. The third point is be sure of your motive. I'm just touching on each one of these points because we could take one of these points and give a whole presentation on them, so I'm just giving a capsulized few thoughts on each one of them. I don't know if I'm going to get to 13, but we'll work at it. The third point is be sure of your motives. Have confidence in your own inner consciousness. We have to recognize that our motivation is attached to the reason that we do things. So what motivates us has to be based on logic and reason, not on emotion and feeling. So we must be humble to the recognition that who we have become and what we have accomplished is a result of hard work or lack of it in our lives so far. So our motivation has to be based on something that is more outside ourselves. And if we want changes in our life, then our motivation has to be different. So we can see success in our lives, and possibly we can see areas in our lives that could become more successful. So again, we have to change that motivation. The fourth point is control the tongue, for a loose tongue is motivated by a loose and degenerate mind. Well, to be able to control the tongue or to be able to control expression does require self-discipline. And you know what it's like when you've expressed a thought to someone and afterwards you thought, gee, I wish I had bit my tongue. That just was not called for, or I didn't express myself clearly, or what have you. So we have to be able to put on the brakes of our verbal expression. And that is a sign of maturity to do so, but it's also a sign of mental control. And it's very important. There are so many expressions that come to mind. I'm sure some of you know these, but these are some of the golden rules from the past, and they're very apt here. People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. And what you see in other people, you put right in yourself. If you can't say anything nice about somebody, don't say anything at all. So having expression is wonderful. Being able to express our thoughts clearly and naturally is very important. Recently, I was taking a course in liability, and one of the 3 points in it was called negligence. The ABCs of negligence. The first rule in negligence is, who do we owe a duty to? And it goes on to say, you owe a duty to anyone who is going to be affected by the act that you're going to do. Like if you're golfing and you're swinging your club, you've got to be looking around you so you don't conk someone on the head and, you know, have a problem afterwards. Well, we have a duty too, and it's not a duty to just people around us. It's a duty to who we're expressing to. It's a duty to our inner potential to express ourselves, appropriately. And it's also a duty to all of life, because every time we utter something, it's a part of life. And it becomes a part of all of life. And so it's a little bit more far-reaching than what we recognize. So we owe a duty to everybody. And I don't mean that duty should always be happy it should always be happy. But sometimes we also have to express ourselves in such a way, especially with mother with a child, you know, you have to discipline the child. And sometimes you have to give strong words, but that's for the benefit of the child as well. And sometimes we may have to do that with our friends, but sometimes we have to be honest with our friends too, especially if they ask what our honest opinion is. And that's all a part of being truthful as well. So the fifth point is, see, hear, and speak only that which is good. See only that which is good. Sort of broke this down. It's very difficult to close our eyes to some of the things that we see in life that are not so good. But we can be aware of those things, but we don't have to become a part of them. And we don't have to put ourselves in a position where we're in a environment where we have to be a part of them. So we just have to guide be more aware of our environment and not take ourselves into places where we'll be a part of things that we know are not going to be to our best advantage. Hear only that which is good. When we listen to gossip or untruth, we are being poisoned. And it is very difficult not to be affected by thoughts that are expressed by someone else that could be an untruth, or it could be a gossip, or it could be, that's what I heard, you know, that sort of thing. So individuality is required, and sometimes a walking away or, you know, an expressing a thought if I disagree with you because so-and-so, whatever. So we have to make a stand that way. Speak only that which is good. That is really something to aspire to, isn't it? To be able to control our expression so that there is no judgment, no criticism, no belittling, no complaining. All of these things, and they think, oh, I have to be perfect. Well, it's something to aspire to. It's something to work towards. You know yourself that when you're with friends and associates that are giving, that are happy, that express themselves in a kind manner, that you really enjoy being around those individuals because they're upbeat. And they have a good attitude towards life. And you can go to them, and they might not be that they're expressive so much as they're they have the ability, again, to put that disk in the computer and draw from whatever is needed to be able to express themselves naturally. I'm going to move on here to the sixth point, and that is learn to express beauty in your thoughts. Remember that life attracts like. Well, it's very similar to the previous one, point that, but we do have a choice that when it comes to unhappy and not so beautiful thoughts, we can just kick them out. We can say, no, I don't want to think those thoughts anymore. You know, there is no point. It just takes me down an unhappy road, and I don't want to go down that road. I want to go down, you know, I want to be happy. So the best part of actually trying to stay on that happy road is that we surround ourselves with like-minded people. And just like misery likes company, beauty is the attractor factor. The seventh point is endeavor to create a happy and beautiful personality environment. You know, so many of us can accept ourselves the way that we are. We never think in terms that we could be anybody different. And there are so many points made about you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and you know, we are the way we are, but we don't accept that in the Cavalarian philosophy. We recognize that we can make changes in our life, and we can create the person that we want to be. It's interesting, if you talk to people and you ask them, you know, what makes you happy? Even talking with a coworker, you ask them, well, why do you do this? What makes you happy? And then, having had that experience, the person's response was, I've never thought about it before. And really, it really is important that we do think about it. And we ask ourselves, what really does make us happy? How can we make our life a more happy experience and a positive experience? So it's very important to take that time and to ask ourselves. We are very fortunate in the Cavalarian philosophy game because we have the knowledge of the five basic truths that give us an understanding what does create happiness and what does create beauty in our lives. The next point is, if your thoughts are good, your personality will reflect them. Again, it's this thoughts are things. The concept of thoughts are things has to be understood. Our personality is an extension or a result of our thinking, every thought that we have. And as we express those thoughts, and we, you could say, as we discipline our thoughts and we control and direct our thoughts, then we will have a beautiful personality, and our beautiful personality will be reflected. The next point is, do not allow self-analysis to become self-concentration. Analysis is the key to our success as a person. It is the ability to compare one thing with another and come to a conclusion as a result of weighing. But where analysis becomes negative, or we could say not so positive, is when we analyze ourselves too much. We can analyze ourselves to the point where we start beating ourselves up, because we made that same mistake again, and we told ourselves we weren't going to, and so forth. And that is very hard on a person's self-esteem. And it's a common problem for those of us that are perfectionists. We want life to be perfect. We want ourselves to do things in the correct way, and so forth. And that's fine and good, but we're all human. And sometimes the greatest growth will come over a mistake that we've made. And as long as we recognize that we can move forward from that, and that it's not an error to make a mistake, as long as we've learned from it and we move on from there. And it also can open the door to lack of confidence, and therefore it can stop us from taking further steps of growth. So I'm just going to go to the next point, and then we will finish off here. Self is a barrier to a superplane of thinking. Master all pettiness that comes to your mind, because it imprisons one in self. Self is the opposite to a universal or spiritual perspective or way of thinking. Self brings our analysis and comparison down to the lowest common denominator. Also, when we analyze relative to self, or we always are looking from the self perspective, again, it is not reliable. We can say to ourselves, well, I think this way, but really what we should be saying is, there is a principle here, and what does this principle say? So there's a few more points that can be made relative to this thought to live by. We're going to copy the point sheet, and we will give you an opportunity to look over it and come up with your own thoughts. And maybe you'll put it on your fridge and gain a few thoughts, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Monica. Excellent presentation. Thank you for those thoughts to live by. Our next speaker is, I didn't bring my notes out. His topic is, what is your philosophical footprint? We often hear about the carbon footprint nowadays. Well, what is your philosophical footprint? And our speaker, De Canario, has been instrumental in the long-term planning of the organization for some time. He has also helped plan the courses that we have and has taught the courses. And so it gives me great pleasure to introduce and bring out De Canario to talk about what is your philosophical footprint. Deacon, thank you.
Good morning. We get to use the, is that on yet?
Yep.
Do you see anything on the screen at all? Okay. You say when. Say when you see something. No, that's not it. So we get to use the new projector, which was donated by Don and Cassandra Maxwell. Always fun to use new technology, as long as it works. So the topic of this presentation was, what is your philosophical footprint? Was actually my wife's idea, so if it doesn't work out, you can blame her. But it was relative, we were looking at a website relative to the carbon footprint. And, of course, the idea is you try to look at your lifestyle choices reduce your impact destructively on the environment. So in the same way, we can look at our philosophical expression and see how we can benefit the environment or benefit life as a whole. So in this case, we're looking at the largest footprint, the better. So the first question, and there's just a series of questions. You can score yourself. So first question is, do I use a balanced name? So how does that impact on our philosophical footprint? Well, first of all, the balanced name is the central core of the five basic truths, which are, of course, mathematics, language, name, mind, and consciousness. So when we're using a balanced name, we're actually taking those five truths and we're creating a harmonious expression of them in our life. So what happens, of course, is our mind becomes more constructive, we become happier, healthier, and really it's the first stage of mental freedom. Again, freedom, mental freedom, is a the fifth law, which is consciousness. So anytime I refer to mental freedom, you can automatically say, well, that is the gradual growth of mind in the expression of consciousness to its highest mental and spiritual levels. So if you did do use a balanced name, you get 50 points. If you don't, if you're considering it, and perhaps you had a name report, then you get, and you're considering it, you get 10 points. And if you ask, what is the balanced name, you don't get any points. Okay. So we're going to go through this, and you can score yourself as we go. So the second question is, do I use the mathematical principle to understand others? And the question is, well, how does that increase my footprint? Well, if you use the principle to understand others, you're basically, it's the key to understanding rather than reacting. So if George is in a mood, you understand, well, it's a 753, there's a little bit of discord there that you need to understand. And again, that understanding gives you that objectivity not to react and just sort of react emotionally. So really the net result of using the mathematical principle to understand others is better communication and more constructive and happy relationships. So, for instance, if you're talking to a 494, you're going to give them, you know, a little bit more detail. Whereas if you're talking to, you know, a 393, you're going to give them a little bit more inspiration. So, again, it does improve our ability to work with others. So, again, you get scores, you get points for this. Do you use it? 50 points. Are you considering it? Perhaps you're considering life analysis training. You get 10 points. If you don't know what the mathematical principle is, you get 0 points. So question number 3, do I use the mathematics principle to understand my own thinking? Well, this is probably the key to mental growth, creating mental freedom, again, the expression of consciousness. It all starts with just analyzing the positive and negative aspect of mind and looking at the mathematical qualities in our own mind. So if we're a little moody, we can recognize that as a negative 7-ish quality, and then we can do something about it to discipline ourselves and to control our thinking, and then create a refinement of mind so that in our own mental expression, there should be a constant progressive change from the little baby that's born in the emotions to the spiritual teacher who can express wisdom. So we're on that spectrum of mental expression, and the only way that we graduate up the spectrum is to analyze our thinking and learn to constructively express all of the constructive qualities and reduce eliminate the weaknesses. So this is the key, using the mathematical principles to basically overcome weaknesses and building strengths. So again, 0 points if you don't know that your thinking is mathematical, 10 points if you're working towards it, and 50 if you do use it. And these are all organized. These questions are based on the courses that we teach. So there's five questions per course. And this is question number 4 of life analysis training. Am I developing my inner potential as measured by the mathematical principle? So we measure the time of birth. We look at the birth path, the groups, the minor lessons, and that gives us a clear guideline of our, shall we say, harvest. It's almost like you look at these little package of seeds, and it shows you what the flower should look like. And it says, well, to get this flower, it needs full light, it needs this much water in such and such a zone. So same thing, if you're a 3 birth path in the air group, you're going to need certain experiences in your life to be able to express that quality. Of course, the first basic principle is the balanced name, because that will give the conduit for that inner power to express. But remember, an inner potential isn't just a 3 birth path or a 4 birth path. It's really a seed of universal thinking. So whatever birth path, that seed is part of the 5th law, which is consciousness, and it has to express the highest that it can, and it does that through growth. So like all growth, you need to understand how, like that seed go through stages to grow to the full expression. And so the same thing, you have to understand your potential and work with that to develop it into a more universal expression. So again, you get some points for this. If you are working on developing it, 50 points. If you're thinking about it, 10. And if you don't know what it is, then 0. Question number 5 is, do I share this principle with others through simple name analyses? Now, it seems a simple thing, and yet, we hesitate sometimes to analyze people. Perhaps we're afraid of how they would react. Now, it's an interesting adage that Mr. Parker had was, to live is to give. And it's quite a direct relationship. It's basically the act of giving changes our expression. And so, like Monica mentioned earlier, it's relative to self. So as we learn to give, we're actually raising our quality of thinking. And, we can give in many ways. We can give physically, like materially by giving money to a good cause, or we can give mentally or physically by donating our time and effort. We can give mentally to people by giving them our attention and our understanding and our focus. But really, to give spiritually, we have to give them the principle. And the simplest way is a simple name analysis, because that's the first, shall we say, introduction to this whole expression of the 5 basic truths in their life. So if they can learn that their name has something to do with their thinking, and they do something about it, they can create mental freedom in their own life. So again, you get some points. 0 for if you don't know what a name analysis is. 10 if you are considering it. And yes, 50 points if you do brief analyses. So now we're moving on to cycles. So you should all have, 5 times 50. You should all have 250 points now, which is good. Am I aware of my personal cycle year, cycle month, and cycle day? And again, awareness is the start. If we look at, we don't know anything about the cycles, then basically we can't use them, and we can't learn to work in harmony with them. So awareness is the first stage. Then question number 7 is, do I use the cycle charts to plan and manage my important decisions? Well, use makes master, and certainly the first time we take cycles, the cycle course, or we're still going to, it's going to take time to develop the experience and the, shall we say, the judgment, really, to use them. And so it takes time, but anything that we do use the cycles with will actually create progress. So, for instance, we use it in our work, we use it in our career, we use it to manage our investments, we use it in our marriage, we use it if we have children, we use it to help raise the children effectively. So anything that we apply cycles to will be invaluable in terms of making the best decision. We sort of look at cycles really as that personal coach that, you know, imagine if you had a access to the best coach in the universe who gives you impersonal truth, you know, no opinions, and really that's really what cycles are. So as we learn to trust them and use them, then we benefit. So if you don't know what a cycle chart is, 0 points. Again, if you're considering it, 10, and if you do use them, 50 points. Question number 8 is, do I use my cycle to develop my mental strength and eliminate my weaknesses? Again, this whole question is, what is the purpose of life? The purpose of life is to express consciousness at its highest level, or developing the mental freedom to express universally in our thinking. And so, again, day by day, there are certain opportunities in the cycle. So if we happen to be in a two-cycle year, that's an opportunity to learn to understand people. It also is an opportunity to get over the weaknesses of the two-year, which may be being more passive and maybe not being as active. So again, we can actually, because we are aware of the cycles, we know the strengths, the weaknesses, we can focus on developing that. And again, it builds our mind to be a more constructive expression. This is a point here. If we feel the cycles, we tend to live the weaknesses. And if we're consciously working with them, then we tend to live the strengths. So it's, again, this thought of mental evolution. Question number 9, do I try to learn the lessons of each cycle to create greater mental freedom? This is relative, but it's a little bit broader. Every cycle has a lesson to learn, you know, from the individuality of the one to the humanitarian love of people of the two to the optimistic self-expression of the three, and all the way through the 9 expressions of this pattern of consciousness, really. So, you know, the 5 basic laws, the 5th one is consciousness, and cycles are, in a sense, the evolving phases of expression or growth of consciousness. So as we learn those lessons, then we grow. So if we're in a 7-cycle year, that's the time you say, oh, well, I'm in a 7-cycle year. It seems so unsettled. The first half can often be unsettled, but it's only unsettled if we're not learning to develop the depth of concept, the depth of understanding, to understand the principles of life. So really there should be no bad cycle. Every cycle should be lived to its fullest expression as we delve into it and learn the lesson for greater freedom. Again, if you're working with that, you get some points. Question number 10, do I introduce the cyclic law to those seeking a better way of life? Well, all of us have probably been out on the boat on the ocean, and one of the cardinal rules is that if there's a distress boater, you help them. In fact, it's not an option. You wouldn't even consider. Some boat is having problems. You see the water is up to the gunwales, and it's, you know, sort of on its last minute. You would go and help them. So the same thing is, there's a lot of distressed people, you know, struggling with decisions in life, trying to, you know, make the best life they can, but they really don't have the principle of the cyclic laws, for example. And so invariably, if we can give them a little bit of it, introduce them to it, perhaps they'll get a cycle chart and begin to make more mental freedom and better choices in their life. So again, that 50 points if you have, and if you do, 10 if you're working, considering it, and 0 if you don't know what the cyclic law is. So now we're on to, now you should all have, 500 points? Now we're on to question number 11 for healthy living. And there's Mr. 5 there with his broken leg. Leaps before he looked. So the question is, am I aware of the direct relationship with the health and the mathematical principle? And again, healthy living, we teach that in some detail. So what it does, it allows you to basically manage your health better. And, of course, how that impacts your philosophical footprint is that if you have a vital and healthy body, then you can be a better your mind has no limitations. There's that physical freedom to basically work towards mental freedom. So, again, that is all taught in healthy living. There's a wealth of knowledge in that course. If you don't know that there's a relationship, 0 points. If you're working towards it, 10 points, and if you do, 50 points. Just an aside there is that one of the things about knowing those, shall we say, relationships is that you can see the warning signs. For instance, a poor quality, invariably, if it's unsettled, we'll go and, you know, they'll look for the bread basket to eat some bread or something starchy and heavy, because that there's a relativity of the four with the elimination in the digestive system. So, you know, if you have that quality and you go for the bread, you say, oh, there's something in my thinking that's a little, shall we say, unsettled. And what you don't need bread. What you need is a deep breath and to calm your thinking. So, again, understanding that relationship of what are the weaknesses of each quality can help you sort of handle and manage your thinking. Healthy living, the key thing there is learning. So the question number 12, do I apply the principles of healthy living to create optimum and vital health? Well, there's a lot of information in healthy living. It's something that you apply gradually. You don't take the course and all of a sudden you're have optimum and vital health. But there's information in there that will basically allow you to fine-tune your life and create health. If you are suffering from challenges, you can rebuild. If you're having most students have all the sort of skills to handle the ongoing challenges of living in this world of tension. So, again, understanding those principles, so if you do have a challenge, going on a brief diet might help, or understanding the principles of breathing, which we'll discuss briefly. But basically, vital health should really be the first stage of mental freedom, because it's that physical freedom, again, that gives you the base to create mental freedom. And mental freedom really is relative to constructive thinking, as mentioned by Monica. And spiritual freedom is really universal thinking. So it's that evolution of consciousness to a higher level. I was going to make a joke about the little picture of the Superman there. So I say, he actually was a trendsetter. If you go to all the exercise gyms, they sort of look like him without the cape. Anyway, fashion's a trendsetter, I should say. So next question, 13. Have I refined my diet or completed a cleansing program in the last 12 months? Something that, fine-tuning our diet, recognizing that, it's important as part of the healthy living program, and it's part of a Kavalarian lifestyle. We all go on 9-day application diets regularly, which is a regular cleansing program. Of course, we teach a moderate vegetarian diet. The key there is moderate. We're not extremists, and that, just learning to create a healthy and constructive diet so that it doesn't become an impediment to our health is an important part of studentship. I was writing down all the things about meat eating. You've got the mad cow disease, you've got the chicken, there was chicken flu, E. coli, the environmental impact. There's all sorts of very obvious and very sort of well-documented risks with a poor diet, a meat-based diet. But really, when we look at this five basic truths again, back to that expression of consciousness, the refinement of the physical body is important to create that refinement in mind. So we do it both for the physical benefits but also for the mental benefits, and that's an important distinction in why we're vegetarians. Again, if you do, 50 points. If you're working on it, 10. If you don't, what it is, 0. Healthy living also introduces our deep breathing exercises. So the question is, do I do daily deep breathing exercises to vitalize my mind and body? And we know that the breathing exercises are key to physical and mental vitality. It also can be key to handling tensions and overcoming weaknesses. But also it develops a much greater conscious energy. So it is a part of studentship. It's something that we do on a regular basis. And we recently were at a Qigong demonstration by Master Effie Chow, And she was showing how the use of qi, which they developed through breathing, they can use to heal people. And right now in China, over 50% of the hospitals are actually using traditional Chinese medicine and qigong to treat all sorts of illnesses. So there's a case where, people have health challenges, they go to the hospital, and someone who's developed their mind and the breath is able to help them by, in a sense, infusing them with some pranic energy or qi energy. So the point is that we shouldn't rely on other people. We should be doing it ourselves, and it's something that we can do, and it will give us huge benefits in our life. So again, if you do breathing exercises, and I should make a distinction, although Mr. Parker studied yoga when he was a young man, he recognized that it was incomplete because it didn't explain mind, and it really didn't explain why only a certain percentage of people could really progress with yoga. And he went on to discover the mathematical principle, which basically explains how, that although the breath will energize the mind, if you have an unbalanced mind and you do breathing, what you do is you energize the unbalanced state of mind. So when we teach the breathing and healthy living because it gives you a chance to study the principle, test it, and then by the time you're in healthy living, you can actually have a balanced name, and then the breathing exercises do a lot of good for you. So not every set of breathing exercises can be are geared to mental freedom, which is what Mr. Parker formulated our breathing patterns specifically for. Some will just make you more sensitive if your unbalanced name creates that relativity, or some will make you more temperamental. So again, the whole thing there is not, these are more advanced levels of application, but they rely on that the balance is in place through the name and through the thinking. Another question is number 15, have I helped someone to better health with the principles of healthy living? And I was just thinking back to that example of the sunflower seed. You take this one seed, you put it in the ground, and after stages of growth, you have this flower that might have maybe 50, 100 or 200 seeds. The same thing with us. We have this wisdom that we have, but if we can give it away, it becomes magnified in the lives of other people. So there is, the ideal behind studentship is really to help others. And we have examples of that in the philosophy, and I think of Dorothy Rollins. I think she's in her 80s now, but she's, a very caring sixth and birth path, and, there's probably not a student that hasn't gone to see her with some challenge. We all have, ups and downs where we deal with life's challenges, and she was a student of Mr. Parker, and she developed a real thorough knowledge of healthy living topics. And so all of us, recognize that, that there's a person who made the effort to create that understanding and also had the responsibility and the sense of reliability to help others, or that urge to help others. So it's an example that we can all sort of take something from and try to be relative to that sort of expression of giving. Again, you get some points for that. Now we're on to the healthy, how to be mentally free. And I see I'm about 5 minutes. I'm in between you and the brunch, so I will have to be quick on these. So the question is, do I have goals and a plan for creating greater mental freedom in my life? And again, that is one of the basic things about the How to Be Mentally Free course. And every slide that we've talked about really is part of a Kevlarian student's plan to create mental freedom. So breathing, diet, thinking, learning to understand people, create more harmonious relationships. Those are all part of our plan. We may not have them written down, but if we're practicing them, that is actually part of our goals and our plan to create freedom. So we get 50 points. How to Mentally Free also talks about tension. Do I know how to eliminate tension from my life? And tension is a stark reality of life. If you look at the average person, they are living in a form of tension. Sometimes it could be extreme where they're, just irrational. Other times it's just, they've got a huge temper. All of those are expressions of temper, of tension. And so if your answer is, are you kidding? That should be 0 points. I'm working towards it, 10 points. Yes, I know how to eliminate tension, 50 points. Again, that's taught in the Have a Mentally Free course as a set of strategies. Breathing is one of them, but also understanding how our mental patterns really create those tensions. So, basically, tension is resolved through greater mental freedom. And so mental freedom, even though it sounds esoteric, it's really a part of all of our life. It's not really optional if we want to live a happy and progressive life. And so it's something that we work at systematically. Question 18, do I read Ketlerian writings on a regular basis to expand my understanding? Skipped ahead here. So, again, an example, if you have a violin and you play a certain note, like C, and you have another violin sitting over here 5-10 feet away, what happens is that violin starts to resonate at the same frequency. If you had 50 violins, they'd all start to resonate. So one of the interesting things about reading the Ketlerian writings is that they're written by a universal mind. So as we, explore the books, we actually are making our self relative to that quality of thinking. So it actually has real benefits in our life. You might have maybe pick up a book and read it for half an hour, and the next day you're thinking about something and you have a thought, and then you have another thought and you say, I'm going to do this. So it actually, if you follow this act, was the energy, the conscious energy of the book that actually, shall we say, gave you the impetus to make the steps of progress. So we as Ketlerians always practice or strive to read Mr. Parker's writings on a regular basis. Even if we've read the book before, we find that we will get more from it. So it really is developing a philosophical plane of mind as a constant expression, and that's something that we have to learn how to do because it's not a natural, and it should be a normal thing, but it isn't normal because of the confusion in the world. Again, you get some points for that. And the next question, 19, do I strive to apply the ethics of right thinking as my code of conduct? And again, these are written by Mr. Parker as stepping stones for mental growth, and most students will have a framed copy of these in their home. But a framed copy is one thing, but actually, you know, reading them and applying them is much more valuable. So you can leave the framed copy as a reminder that this is something that you're striving to live towards. Essentially, if we were to express the ethics in our thinking, we would be universal in our concepts. Question 20, do I attach an ideal to my activities to lift my vision beyond self? Again, this is relative to what Monica was discussing. And Mr. Parker wrote that we should attach an ideal to everything we do. He didn't say, well, attach an ideal to your work. He said, attach it to everything. So everything we do really has a reason, and it ties into that overall plan of mental freedom, creating a greater expression of consciousness, and that's part of how we do it, because if we have a universal ideal and we attach it to our efforts, then we draw from the conscious energy or intelligence of that ideal, So it's part of our growth, really. If you don't, it's like a target. You know, if you don't have a target, you're not going to hit it. So I guess the expression there, what is it? If you fail to plan, you're planned to fail. So the same thing with ideals. You have to actually attach universal ideals to all of our activities. So we're into the last five, and these are relative to senior studentship. So they sort of are more of a combination of all those principles in a sort of active life style. And so have I made service to the principle of life part of my thinking? And, it sounds esoteric. What is service to the principle? And really it is applying the teachings of the physical and mental laws so that we create mental freedom in our life. And then whatever we're doing, if we're a parent, that mental freedom becomes a strength for the child that we're bringing up. If we're a business person, that mental freedom becomes a strength for all the people we're dealing with. If we're a retired person, that mental freedom creates a very active and progressive mind where they keep being very creative and original. I know many people in their later years that have a hard time keeping up with mentally because they're so creative. So, again, that's what it should be. We should be progressing so that every decade, we should have a broader and more universal concept, and that is really service to the principle. Ongoing participate. Do I participate and support the ongoing classes and organizational events? Well, as far as we know, the philosophy is the only organization that really teaches mental freedom in the unique way of understanding the mathematical principle and how it applies to the five basic truths. And as we participate and support, we're really all those activities are really geared towards mental freedom in one way or the other. So we're both supporting it, and we're also drawing from that energy. So, again, if you are participating, if you're near a center, then you should, that's part of your studentship. If you're on your own and at a distance, we do broadcast a lot of our classes, either live or as recorded sessions. So, again, you can participate at a distance as well. Question 23, do I write my thoughts down on a regular basis to apply my understanding to current issues and events? So an interesting point about that, and that's just like reading philosophy. Writing philosophy is developing and clarifying our concepts. They did a study that showed that having a journal will extend your life. I can't remember if it was 5 or 7 years, but they had definite statistical evidence that people with journals live longer. It has to do with, in a sense, if you look at it, the inner potential needs an avenue of expression. So if the person doesn't have it verbally, then if they get it in a written fashion, that's still an expression of that inner power. So writing is actually, philosophical writing is a very, very powerful tool for growth. If your answer was, who has time? 0 points. I'm working at it. 10 points. Yes, 50 points. So question 24, am I making my life a more constructive, conscious effort using the Kabbalistic wisdom? Mr. Parker really created the largest footprint that we're aware of in really in our age and perhaps many ages past by understanding, creating a new understanding of mind and how to apply a basic practical effort to create universal thinking. So, again, as we apply these teachings, our life will become a more conscious effort. So, again, that is 0, 10, and 50. And the last question is, have I helped others with their mental growth? Now, just seeing the little icon there, or picture, is a mountaineering. So mountaineering is safest as a team endeavor. So too, mental growth is really a form of mountaineering, climbing that peak of universal perspective. So, you know, sometimes in mountaineering, you get out on a ledge, and there's times where you sort of need somebody to give you a little bit of direction. So, again, as we learn the principle, we learn to give it by helping people when we can, and that is worth 50 points. So here's your score. You can add them up. If you've got 0 to 250 points, well, you can develop more awareness of these principles and it will pay real dividends. If you have 250 to 750 points, you're progressing and we'll see many benefits flow into your life. And if you have 750 to 1250 points, you're making a permanent contribution to the wall of truth. And that term, wall of truth, is really more of a symbol that we use for the... Maybe it's a symbol for universal thinking that is developed as a permanent expression of Kabbalarian wisdom. So we, as students, we all draw from it as we think about the principle, and we all contribute to it as we express it and learn to express constructively. So I hope that you are ready for brunch because it's just about time, and thank you.
Thank you, Deacon. That was a very creative and comprehensive overview. So, the announcements upcoming, as you have heard, we have a brunch for your... there's delicious brunch downstairs for everyone. You're all invited, and the admission is by donation. And what's coming up is... there are still life analysis training, the last 2 or 3 weeks of it, Tuesday nights here at 5912 at 7:30. And next Sunday, we have senior philosophy class, 7:30 p.m. And in 2 weeks, and then their 1st of May is the Kabbalarian Men's Club and Kabbalarian Women's Club meetings at 7:30 p.m. here again at the hall. Our next philosophy school is May the 4th, 10 a.m. in 2 weeks, and we have two speakers again. We have Lorenda Bardell and we have Brooklyn Tyler, and they recently gave the psychomanagement training class and are going to be sharing some of their thoughts with you. So we have that to look forward to. We usually close the class with a song, and this morning we're going to sing song number 1, Count Your Blessings. Please join me. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Harmonious week.